Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to Tech Talk, RNIB Connect Radio's regular journey into the world of accessible technology. I'm Dave Williams. A very warm welcome in. And don't forget, of course, that Tech Talk is your program. And if you've got any thoughts about technology from a blindness or partially sighted perspective, we would love to hear them. I mean, literally, we'd love to hear them. So if you'd like to record us a voice message and send it via email, you can do that to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's T-E-C-H, talk@rnib.org.uk. This week, we'll be hearing about how Callum Stoneman got on with the new app from Guide Dogs for reporting those guide dog refusals. We'll also be hearing how alt tags are making images from space more accessible. And we'll be learning more about a trial by Southwestern Railway to test the My Eyes app in two of their stations. That's all coming up this time on Tech Talk. Joining us, as ever, are our co-hosts, Tasni Marshad, Callum Stoneman. A very warm welcome into you both. You well?
Yes, good, thank you. Wonderful to be here, as always.
Yeah, very well, thanks. Looking forward to another Tech Talk. As you'll hear in a bit, I'm very impressed by the Guide Dogs app.
Fantastic. What's grabbing your attention, Tasni, in the world of technology?
I've got a new phone, so I'm just having a play with that and looking at all of its new features. So I'm enjoying learning more about my smartphone features. And I'm particularly interested in, well, knowing more about the alt tag pictures.
Welcome into you both, and we're looking forward to another Tech Talk. So last week on Tech Talk, we heard about how guide dogs are trying to tackle the issue of guide dog refusals with a new campaign and app. Well, we thought we'd take it for a little bit of a test. So Callum Stoneman has been having a play.
We've heard recently here on Tech Talk and indeed across Connect Radio about the new Open Doors campaign from Guide Dogs and their new app that they recently launched to help guide dog owners, such as myself, quickly and easily report access issues. And I promised that I'd give you a demo of the app once I'd had a play. So what I've done here, I've actually uninstalled the app and then reinstalled it again because I wanted to show you how easy this is to get going with. There's literally no setup required. So hopefully this will run as if I've just downloaded it for the first time. So let's get into it.
Guide Dogs.
So this is the Guide Dogs app on my home screen. I'm just going to double tap.
Alert. Allow Guide Dogs to track your activity across other companies' apps and websites.
If you're on an earlier version of iOS, you might not get this prompt. But if you do, I'm going to say no to this. I don't really know why it needs this permission. So I'm going to say no here. I'd recommend that you say no wherever you see this, to be honest. Not just in the Guide Dogs app.
This identify ask app not to track button.
That's what we want. So we'll double tap.
Guide Dogs. Navigate home button.
And we're now on the homepage. So I'm just going to flick to the right here. And we'll see what we've got.
Back button, open doors for guide dogs, heading. Our new app helps guide dog owners quickly and easily report access refusals so we can build a true picture of the number of refusals taking place. This will help our campaign to put a stop to them altogether. Guide dog owners can also use the app to educate businesses using our template letters or ask for more support from guide dogs. Together, we can make sure everyone knows they need to have open doors for guide dogs.
Okay, so a nice bit of info there.
Report access issue. Button. Display access card. Button.
And those two buttons, the report access issue and display access card, they're also duplicated in the tabs at the bottom. So I'll carry on flicking to the right.
Our research shows that 75% of assistance dog owners have been refused access to a restaurant, shop or taxi. Guide dog owners have told us what a negative impact this can have on their well-being and how it limits their ability to live the life they choose.
Okay, a little bit more info there on some of their research.
Access card. Tab 1 of 4. Tab.
And now we're onto the tabs at the bottom. So we've got access card.
Report access issue. Tab 2 of 4. Tab.
Report access issue.
Contact guide dogs. Tab 3 of 4. Tab.
Contact guide dogs.
Resources. Tab 4 of 4. Tab.
And resources. So let's go from the start. Let's have a look at the access card tab.
Access card. Tab. Navigate home. Button.
Now I believe what this is. I've got a physical card that basically just says, I don't know the exact wording of it, but it basically says that my guide dog is allowed, you know, working guide dogs are allowed in any place that is accessible to the public. And I think what we've got here is just a basically a digital copy of that physical access card, if you have it. So let's just see what this says.
A legal right to access. Heading. By law, working guide dogs have the right to enter taxis, shops, restaurants and other places open to the public. Heading. For more information, visit www.equalityhumanrights.com, www.equalityne.org. A company limited by guarantee registered in England and Wales, 291. Report access issue, button, selected, access card, tab 1 of 4. Tab.
So that's what we've got for the access card, and there's another button there to report an access issue. So let's have a look at that next, because this is clearly the main focus of the app, and this is clearly where the entire reason that it exists and the reason that people are going to be using it. So let's have a look.
Report access issue. Tab 2 of 4. Tab. Navigate home. Button. Back. Button. Report access issue. Heading. Experience to new access or inaccessible public space issue. Heading. Report issue. Button.
Okay, so let's double tap on this.
Report. Navigate home. Button.
And what we've got here is basically a form to fill in. So we won't submit any data here, because I don't want to falsely report someone. But let's just flick through and see what we've got.
Back, button, report issue, heading, question 1 of 1, issue type. Option 1 of 2, access refusal. Report when you have been refused access or incurred extra charges due to your guide dog, radio button. Option 2 of 2, inaccessible public space. Report barriers experienced when out and about, radio button. Access card. Tab 1 of 4.
Okay, so it starts off with those two options and then you go back to the tabs at the bottom. So just to get the full form, let's click on the access refusal bit.
Option 1 of 2, access refusal.
There we go.
Report selected. Option 1 of 2, access refusal. Report when you have...
Now, a full form has appeared underneath these, so let's have a look at the other questions.
Option 2 of 2, question 2 of 7, location of issue required. Location of issue required, button.
Now, if I was to double tap that, it would then ask for permission to use my location. So then it would automatically show you businesses that are nearby. So pretty useful if you were, say, right outside the place where the issue took place, where the refusal took place, you could quickly and easily report it there and the app should find the business based on your location, and you can enter details manually as well. So it doesn't have to be your current location.
Question 3 of 7, date and time of issue required. Date and time of issue required. Date. Current value, Monday the 1st of August, 2022, button. Date and time of issue, required. Time, current value, 18.04, button.
So it's gone to the current date and time by default, but that's pretty self-explanatory. You can put in the date and time there.
Question 4 of 7, define issue, required. Option 1 of 2, I believe I was refused access as a result of my guide dog, radio button. Option 2 of 2, I believe I was treated differently slash unfavorably as a result of my guide dog, radio button. Question 5 of 7. Please describe the incident and its impact. Please describe the incident and its impact. Text field. Question 6 of 7.
So you've got a free, evidence. You've got a free text field there where you can just describe what exactly happened and, you know, possibly what was said and how the issue was left before reporting it.
Please describe.
And this next one I really like.
Question 6 of 7. Upload audio evidence. Optional. Add file.
So that bit there was audio evidence. So if you managed to get an audio clip, you know, let's say you were trying to get into a restaurant and they said, nope, no dogs. And, you know, you're saying, but, you know, it's a guide dog and they're insisting, and you managed to get an audio recording of it, then you could upload it there and that would be submitted with your report. So a quick and easy way of getting evidence to guide dogs as well, which I really like. And that is optional. If you didn't get an audio recording of the incident, you don't have to upload it. But the option's there if you did manage to get that, which is really, really nice.
Add question 7 of 7. What action would you like to take? Required. Option 1 of 4. I want to contact the business to tell them about the incident and the law. Radio button. Option 2 of 4. Share incident with guide dogs and receive advice before taking action. Radio button. Option 3 of 4. Share incident with guide dogs and we will send educational information to the business on access rights. Anonymous. Radio button. Option 4 of 4, share the incident with guide dogs for campaigns and reporting purposes. Radio button.
So then you've got different options of how you want it to be handled. You know, do you want to handle it? Do you want to get support from guide dogs? Do you want to report it anonymously but have guide dogs do something about it? Or do you want to just you know, reports it to guide dogs for their research purposes.
Continue button.
Now, we're not going to click continue here because obviously we haven't filled out any information. Now, there's a couple of things. I haven't gone any further with than this when I've been playing with it because you've got to put in, you know, a location and things like that. And I don't want to, as I said before, I don't want to accidentally create a false report for a nearby business because that wouldn't be good. So I imagine, because we've not been asked to kind of sign up for anything here, we've not been asked to create an account or sign in or for any details or anything. So I imagine if we were to click continue, it would then ask for things like contact details. I'm also not entirely clear about, for example, because you have to choose a location and it has to be an address from what I can work out. So if you were refused, you know, a taxi, for example, I'm not entirely sure how that works on the app. I'm not entirely sure on that just yet, because obviously you wouldn't want to put the location of the business, because from my understanding, from what I can work out, that would mean that you were saying the business refused you and it's not actually the case. It was a taxi driver outside the business. I don't know. There could be some sort of misunderstandings there. I have put the question for guide dogs, so we'll see if I get a response on that, because that wasn't entirely clear at first, but I'm sure it's possible because they know that taxi refusals are an issue. Let's just have a quick look at some of the other features that we've got in the app. So
access card selected, contact guide dogs, tab 3 of 4, tab.
Contact guide dogs. Let's see what we've got here.
Navigate home button.
I think this will just be contact details, but let's have a look.
Back. But contact guide dogs, heading, phone guide dogs, 0800781-1444. Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. button. Email guide dogs. Information at guidedogs.org.uk. Button. Mobile app feedback. Have ideas on how we can improve our app? Please email us. campaigns@guidedogs.org.uk. Button. Access card. Tab 1 of 4. Tab.
There you go. So three very nice little features there. A nice quick way of being able to find the contact information and the opening hours. And a nice little way to leave app feedback as well. And finally, let's have a quick look at resources. And again, I'm not going to go into all of these, but I'll just let you see what's there.
Resources. Navigate home. Button. Back. But resources. Heading. Your access rights with your guide dog. This document provides you with information on your access rights as a person with sight loss with a guide dog. Button. Refused access. Be clear on your rights. We've created a simple way to remember what to do if you're refused access to a venue or service. Just think clear. Button. FAQs, frequently asked questions, undefined, button. Privacy policy, undefined, button. Cookie policy, undefined, button.
And then there's just, you know, privacy policy, cookie policy, and all that. So that is pretty much the new Guide Dogs app. A really nice little app, a really nice, easy way to report access refusals, a really nice way of being able to quickly contact guide dogs and find contact information rather than having to search the website or, you know, look around on Google for the information. And of course, a nice easy way to access resources and documentation and FAQs on what to do if you are refused. So well done to guide dogs on this one. I will hopefully have some answers to the questions about, you know, submitting a taxi refusal as well. But overall, a very nice little app. It's completely free as well, obviously, so just go to your app store, type in Guide Dogs. The full name of the app is Guide Dogs Access Refusals for Guide Dogs, but if you just type into your app store Guide Dogs, it should be the first result, and on your home screen, as you heard there, it's just called Guide Dogs. So it's a very nice little app, and I highly recommend that you download it and just have it handy, you know. Of course, we never want to be refused as guide dog owners, but if we are, if the worst happens, then this is definitely a nice little app to have at hand to quickly and easily submit a report.
Callum, now you've had a chance to use the app from Guide Dogs, have you got anything to add?
I think I'm just impressed by how nice and simple it is and just the range of functionality in there. I mean, obviously, quickly and easily report refusals, as we thought, it is as simple as we thought it would be. But also having your access card quickly and easily available. That's the little card that I mentioned there that says, you know, working guide dogs are allowed in any publicly accessible place by law. And, you know, if you need to, then you can just quickly pull that card up. And it's got resources in there as well. So, you know, you can send resources to businesses. It's got FAQs on our rights, because there are very, very odd occasions where, you know, guide dogs might not be allowed in certain places. Admittedly, not many, but there are some, and, you know, you've got resources in there. And how you can ask guide dogs right in the app to contact the business on your behalf as well. So if you don't want to necessarily educate the business yourself, you can report it and just say to guide dogs, you know, can you educate this business? Can you do something about this?
Brilliant. Okay, well, I'm sure we're going to hear more about this app as we move forward. So if you've had chance to give it a go, let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Callum Stoneman, thanks very much. Now, since I was a small child, I've always been fascinated by the world of astronomy. But obviously, as a blind person, it's not always been the most accessible of subjects. And on the 25th of December 2021, Christmas Day, I watched in awe as the James Webb Telescope was launched into orbit with the promise of stunning images of the universe. I knew, of course, that I would never see any of these images, and I was delighted when a few weeks ago NASA published some what can only be described as out-of-the-world descriptions of the pictures captured by the James Webb Telescope. Well, joining us to talk about that and also related work is, all the way from Washington, D.C., Dr. Joel Snyder. Welcome to Tech Talk, Joel. Fantastic to have you with us. Were you, like me, equally stunned and just jaw on the floor when these descriptions of these incredible images came out?
Indeed, I was. And thank you for inviting me to chat with you, Dave. Absolutely. Now, I'm an old-sighted guy, but I've been involved with audio description for 41 years from its very beginnings here in the Washington, D.C. area. And indeed, when those images came out, I looked at them and I considered, wow, how do you translate such magnificent images to words, to give the same kind of, to put people who are blind on a par with sighted people? How can we do that with language, with words? And NASA beat me to it. But it's their province anyway, so that's fine. And they did a wonderful job with it.
A star field is speckled across the image. They range from small, faint points of light to larger, closer, brighter, and more fully resolved stars with 8-point diffraction spikes. The upper right portion of the image has wispy, translucent, cloud-like streaks rising from the nebula.
These words have been widely applauded as being aesthetically beautiful, but also scientifically accurate. And I think it really is a skill, like quite an art form, to, whether it's an alt tag or whether it's audio description in a movie or a TV show, to pick the right words. Because, you know, we hear this phrase, you know, a picture, you know, paints a thousand words or whatever. And you don't have to use a thousand, but it's about using the right words.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. In fact, that was mentioned in the article that came out recently in the Washington Post. One of the people at NASA was saying, you know, a picture's worth a thousand words. And that's sometimes poo-pooed, if you will. And I'm one of those people kind of wondering about that. How many blind people have I met that want to hear a thousand words about a picture? You know, the individual drafting these was getting at the point that using language and using the right words, even if it is more words than not, can be quite stunning and quite wonderful to listen to for a sighted person or a person who's blind.
The steam that appears to rise from the celestial mountains is actually hot ionized gas and hot dust streaming away from the nebula due to intense ultraviolet radiation. Dramatic pillars rise above the glowing wall of gas, resisting the blistering ultraviolet radiation from the young stars.
You know, I come from audio description for theater and for media, for television and film and such, museums as well. But with television, film, performing arts, you're really limited to a certain amount of time weaving the description within the sound elements of a play or a film. So a little bit different, but alt text, alt tags are sometimes really, you come up with just what are not so much descriptions as labels or names. And it was marvelous to see what NASA did with these images. They went beyond that and really brought them to a whole new audience.
You alluded to it there. The Washington Post published an article really describing the process, actually, that, you know, these words didn't just happen. This was a kind of a 2-year process where individuals were asked to practice describing images and to get the language just right. I mean, how typical is that, Joel, in your experience working in this area?
Well, that's such a great point, Dave, because to the layperson, to a sighted person who sees passively, not actively, you know, they might think, well, describing that's, you know, that's a table, that's a glass, that's a chair. What's the problem here? That's not difficult to do. It is surprisingly difficult to use words that will have the greatest impact in the least amount of time, I must say, to convey that visual image, going from the visual to a sense form that's accessible to people who are blind. It really is something that is studied. I have my own PhD is in the practice of audio description. I've written the book, The Visual Made Verbal, about the practice, and it really is something that requires the development of skills. The American Council of the Blind and its audio description project sponsors every year 2 audio description institutes where we train people in the development of the words, the language, and its voicing, which can also be very much a part of conveying the sense of an image with words, with the spoken word.
Let's talk about the work of the American Council of the Blind, in particular the Audio Description Project, because you kind of head that up, and you have been really a key figure in spreading and educating the world. I mean, I was looking at your travel itinerary just before we started recording here, and I know that a lot of it is virtual at the moment, but you get about.
Indeed. Well, yeah, the Audio Description Project started just about 12 years ago. I founded the project with the good folks at the American Council of the Blind as a way to get the word out about audio description. Audio description lacks, forgive the expression, visibility among the general public. You know, people out there in the general public, they see captions. They know about captions. They know that they're there principally for the use of people who are deaf. You don't see audio description. It's an invisible process. It's done typically, it's simply heard by the people who desire the process. They turn on a separate kind of channel with their television for streaming, for videos, or they're given a headset that they use in the movie theater or in a performing arts space. It's invisible. And we wanted to build advocacy. We wanted to spread information. And I think over the 12 years, I am now, I'm referred to as its founder and senior consultant. It's been taken over by the ongoing full-time staff at the American Council of the Blind. I'm still very much connected with it. Jolynn Bailey Page is the Audio Description Project Coordinator, and the whole process is led by Kim Charlson and Carl Richardson, who are both blind individuals. Carl is blind and deaf, and they are the co-chairs of the steering committee of the Audio Description Project for the American Council of the Blind. We have our website probably is the most visible part of the Audio Description Project. If I may, just your folks can simply go to adp.acb.org. It really is the go-to place for information about audio description in the United States. You can go there and find out what's on television right at that moment with audio description, what films are being streamed with description, what performing arts spaces, what museums in your state have audio description, and loads of articles about description. But we also have a number of other initiatives. I mentioned the Audio Description Institute. We have a great program that I started about 12 years ago. It's now called BADI, B-A-D-I-E, an acronym for Benefits of Audio Description in Education. We give awards to young blind students who write reviews of audio described videos, and we honor them, we honor their teachers and such. We give awards generally to the field of audio description. RNIB has been recognized by the ACB's audio description project with one of our international awards, if memory serves, so we try to acknowledge and advocate for description all around the world. We do conferences every other year principally that bring people from around the world to the United States to discuss audio description. And we have many different projects. In fact, I should mention that in 2017, on behalf of the American Council of the Blind and the Audio Description Project, I produced audio description that was broadcast nationally, really internationally on ACB Medium, of the solar eclipse that we had in 2017, and that was an occurrence in our own galaxy, of course. And what was so wonderful about the NASA event is it's really about time that the art of describing images has finally reached beyond our own galaxy. So,
so that actually brings us neatly back to the James Webb images, because we sort of changed lanes slightly from describing images, alt tags, and kind of got into some of the work of the Audio Description Project. And these are kind of overlapping fields, I suppose.
They are. I think sometimes of alt, and well, the way alt tags and alt text are used, those techniques are used, they end up being labels or names in a way. And of course, a name, a label, is not exactly a description. So that was part of what was so lovely about the NASA's Webb images and their descriptions, is that they went beyond simply saying, well, that's a galaxy. Well, what is a galaxy? What does a galaxy look like? We got a name, we got a title, great, but what does that mean? How can you describe that and make that tangible in a way to a person who's blind or has low vision?
A large, translucent red oval surrounds the central stars. From the red oval, shells extend in a mix of colours. The shells appear to have a filamentous pattern, similar to the surface of a cut citrus fruit.
With audio description, we try to, sometimes because of timing, we're limited to a split second. And sometimes we resort to a name or a title. But, with alt tags, really you're not limited in time as much. You don't want to go on and on and on, certainly. But having a bit more description, indeed, there is an art to it. And it's wonderful to see that the folks at NASA took advantage of that.
Now, obviously, in this community, we understand the value of great alt tags and audio description. But what are some of the ways in which we can reach the wider world and perhaps incentivize, better description everywhere? How do we make the business case, for example?
Well, you say the wider world, and of course, most people in the world are sighted. And although, the American Foundation for the Blind recently acknowledged that there are over 31 million people in the U.S. alone who are either blind or have trouble seeing even with correction. Now, that's significant. That's 8% of the population. But indeed, as far as the wider world is concerned, audio description, I think, can benefit so many people. There have been papers written on the use of audio description for people on the autism spectrum, for people learning a new language, for people with different kinds of learning disabilities and such. But it's like captions for people who are deaf, but people who hearing folks, they see those captions at the bar or at the gym and they think, oh, isn't that nice that they put those captions in there for us? Or curb cuts, of course, curb cuts, bicyclists and women or men pushing a stroller would say, oh, isn't that nice they put those curb cuts in there? Well, they're there for people who use wheelchairs principally. I think we need to do a better job at showing people how description can help even sighted people realize something that they missed. You know, people, again, they see passively, not actively, and they'll miss things. Had they been listening to the description, ah, sure, okay, I understand what that is now. That makes sense, even though I'm sighted, you know. And the whole idea of an audio film has yet to be exploited. The idea that you could take the audio track of a film, combine it with the audio description track, so you still just have an audio file, and yet sighted people then could take that and relive the experience of a film in their cars on a long trip or at the gym or while they're jogging. Audiobooks are on the upswing around the world, and I think audio films will come around as well, and that's just one example of how audio description can be acknowledged and used and broadened beyond to that wider world.
Yeah, I discovered a way of locking my phone and playing Netflix while the phone is locked, you know, so I can carry on about my day while I'm listening to something. So, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. How do we persuade individuals and organizations to really follow NASA's lead and you know, really kind of take up the challenge of not just labeling things, but actually really going to town and making them beautiful and informative?
Sure. Well, you know, Dave, you're doing it. You're picking up on the story and taking the initiative to publicize it on RNIB Connect. And we need to do more of that. We need to celebrate that the article that was written by Teresa Vargas in the Washington Post, spread the word about this interview, your work in publicizing it, letting people know how important audio description can be, not just for the folks for whom it's primarily directed, but really for everybody. If it's done well, the key is that it never should be a distraction. It should enhance the experience. And that's true for a blind person and even a sighted person. I believe it can really enhance. I think you'll begin to experience open description at certain movies or certain plays, so that, in other words, the description is there for everybody to hear. It's not limited to people who desire the service and have to get a headset or use their smartphones or something like that. It's there for everybody. And I think with certain productions, and if it's done well, the audio description is incorporated within the production. And people will not even realize there's anything unusual or different. Hopefully they'll come away with a greater understanding and appreciation of a given arts event just because the description is there, whether they're sighted, whether they're blind. I think that we've got a long, you know, description's been around now 41 years ago. I was part of the world's first audio description service developed here in Washington, D.C. I think over the next 41 years, we'll see a real broadening of audio description, and it's pick up among folks who are sighted as well.
We have come such a long way. You're absolutely right. And I was fortunate enough to be invited to speak at the Netflix premiere of The Gray Man, which did have open audio description. And I was sort of lamenting the fact that, you know, 25 years ago, the only widely available audio described movie here in the UK belonged to my sister, and it was on VHS. And I gave the audience a clue to see if they could figure out what it was. And I remember a line, something like, Vivian is in the bath covered in bubbles. And it was, of course, Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Joel Snyder, it has been an absolute treat speaking with you, and I really hope we can get you back on in the future. So many things to talk about there. I remember that eclipse, of course, in 2017. We actually took a cruise to experience that from the Atlantic Ocean, and it was just such a remarkable occasion. And I know that Orbit Research, they did a thing with their graffiti tactile tablet where you could sort of feel the eclipse as it progressed as well. So so fascinating stuff. We will definitely stay in touch, and we will keep an eye on your work, and thank you for all you do for our community to be such a strong advocate and leader in this whole area.
Oh, thanks so much, Dave. This has been delightful.
Joel Snyder from Audio Description Associates. Thanks very much. We're joined now by our co-hosts, Tasni Marshad and Callum Stoneman. Tasni Marshad, do you think alternative text for images, do you find it useful?
I think so, yes. I think it's really important, you know, to have a description of images, especially obviously when you're not able to see them. If you find them on a page, whatever you're looking, whether you're surfing the net or you're on social media, and if it just comes up with, you know, graphic and nothing else, whether you're using, you know, you're on a PC or you're on a mobile device, then that can be really frustrating. So any level of description, even a couple of words, I find is incredibly helpful. And I think there should be a lot more of it around.
It's a real art form, isn't it, Callum? Like, to get the right words, you know, because that's the beautiful thing about these NASA images, is that they're not just aesthetically pleasing, but they're also scientifically accurate. And all that is coming through in the descriptions that we've received there. So sometimes it's choosing the right words, not necessarily all the words, that is important.
Yeah, I guess you can say what they've done here is out of this world.
And how long was that going to take? Yeah, fantastic. Hey, what about social media, Callum? You use Twitter and the like.
Yeah, I do. And I think it's quite good that social media companies are doing a bit more of a push for alt text now. So Twitter recently added their alt text reminder thing, which is a little pop-up that can come up. I think it's only rolled out to certain users at the minute, but that's a little pop-up where when they're adding images to tweets, it will give a little reminder and say, you know, consider adding alt text to this image to make it more accessible for visually impaired users. And they've got a little learn more button in there, which brings up articles on, you know, writing descriptive alt text and useful alt text. And it's nice to see it having a bit more of a mainstream push and, you know, giving a bit more attention in social media, because of course, you know, web developers, website designers will probably know about alt text, or at least they should do. But if you're just your average person, sticking a picture of your, you know, family gatherings or your picture of your food on Facebook or Twitter, understandably, you're not necessarily going to be clued up on alt text. I mean, as we know, people are shocked that us visually impaired people can even use a phone, let alone use social media platforms. So that is where you find a lack of it on social media, I think.
That is true. And I don't know about you, Callum, I have to confess to a little bit of hypocrisy here myself, because I know sometimes I've given my phone to somebody and they've taken a picture that I've then shared on social media, but I don't really know how to describe it. You know, it might be a picture of me or, you know, something with my family or doing something. And, you know, I'll kind of say what it is, but I don't really describe it as such. Have you found yourself in that situation?
Yeah, quite a bit. I mean, there's been times where I have put photos on, and yeah, I'll admit I've not always put a description on. Usually it's if we're out, as I said, you know, family event or something like that, and there'll be a whole bunch of photos there, and I'll know from what people have described to me that they're photos of the event. So it might be photos of me and my family or a photo of me and my wife or something, but I don't necessarily know what's going on. I just know they're from that event. So yeah, sometimes then I'll put them on with no description. It is a bit hypocritical, isn't it?
Well, I know. And I suppose the onus is then on the person who took the photos to kind of share that information with us, you know, because sometimes I'll go to an event, somebody will take a bunch of photos and they'll send me like 16 pictures, you know, and I don't really know what each of them shows. And I think, well, people might be interested to see these. But, you know, what happens? Do we kind of decide not to share in it? I mean, what do you think, Tasneem? If somebody's got a picture that they want to share, ought they not to share it if they haven't got a meaningful description to go along with that?
I think it's very difficult to make a decision then, isn't it, whether you forward that picture on, because you don't know what's in it. You might have a rough idea of the event, but you know, you may or may not want to share that picture. So yeah, I think it's important, isn't it, to have some idea or to ask for sighted help then, just to give you a little bit of an idea of what's in the photographs, before you consider either sharing them or even keeping them. If you want to, you know, you might not want to keep all 16 or 20, or, you know, you might only want to keep three or four of them. So it's a good kind of filing job as well, isn't it, in terms of electronically what you'd like to keep and what you'd like to share.
We're all short on space. Callum Stoneman, in terms of the nuts and bolts then of how you go about labelling your images on social media and how you read those labels when they've been posted, you know where I'm going. Are you up for recording a little demo?
Yes, that's fine. I just give myself more work every week with this.
Thank you very much. Tasneem Arshad, Callum Stoneman, thanks.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
You're listening to Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio. Now, if you were tuned in a few months ago, you will have heard our interview with McGill from My Eyes, who were conducting a trial of their Bluetooth navigation technology at the Victoria and Albert Museum up in Dundee. Well, I've come to Vauxhall Railway Station, and I'm with Mike Adlington, who is the Senior Accessibility and Inclusion Manager with South Western Railway. Hi, Mike. Good to be with you. We've just stepped inside the station manager's office just to get out of the wind and the noise of the trains. Thanks for being with us here on Tech Talk. Let's just start. How did you first become involved with this trial of the My Eyes technology?
Hi, Dave. So we met with Marsha de Cordova, who is the MP for Battersea, down at neighbouring Clapham Junction station. And as we were walking Marsha through the station, explaining the improvements that we'd already made around accessibility to the station, but also talking about future plans, she mentioned to us that she actually knew of a company that could support us with our assisted boarding points, especially to support those living with sight loss. So Marsha actually put us in touch with My Eyes, and that's how it all started.
Excellent. What's happened since then?
So since we met with Marsha, we have installed some Bluetooth beacons at Vauxhall and Putney stations. We've also used some GPS locator tags, and in its simplest terms, we've programmed each beacon with different pieces of information to help customers navigate through the station, because a lot of our wayfinding particularly is very visual in nature. So it's something that can really support those who have very limited vision or indeed registered blind, that they don't need to necessarily ask a South Western Railway colleague, could you assist me through the station? Using this app, we hope that it can make people travel as independently as possible.
Right, so that human assistance, that's still going to be available. You're not withdrawing that. This is another option.
Absolutely, that human assistance will always be there. We're not going to withdraw that at all. I think for some people, it might be that I just don't want to talk to anyone today and I just want to do it myself. And I think by having this as an extra tool that somebody could use, it should allow people to travel as independently as possible. But indeed, if you do need some help, where we do have staff at stations already, they will still be there to provide any assistance that our customers require.
Right, so let's talk about the technology and what the experience will be for blind and partially sighted people arriving at Vauxhall, and I think you said Putney stations as well. So what happens? Do I need to download an app, presumably?
Yes, so you will need access to a smartphone and you'll need to download the My Eyes app onto your phone. What you then do once you've signed into the app, when you approach one of these Bluetooth beacons, as long as Bluetooth is turned on your phone, it will then tell you where you are and you will have some options if you'd like to navigate your way through the station. We can also program the beacons to tell customers what the actual train service is from this station, and you go from there and select what you'd like to do.
So you start the app and you just have the app running in the background as you're moving through the station. And of course, you know, it's important to emphasize that you need to focus primarily on your core mobility skills using your long cane or guide dog or however you would normally navigate. And then perhaps using, say, bone conduction headphones or some kind of earphone that's not going to impede your ability to hear the environment around you. The app will announce that information to you.
Yes, absolutely. And it's a very good point. I would highly recommend using some kind of earpod or headphone, etc., so that only you can really hear it and it's not broadcasting to the world around you. The idea of this trial is that we do get feedback from those people with lived experience of sight loss so that we know what do we need to do to improve and adapt this app. And crucially, what are we actually missing within these bits of information that we can then program later?
Oh, and the two stations that you've chosen, were there any particular reasons that kind of led you to that decision?
We were hoping, once we'd spoken with Marcia, De Cordova, the MP at Battersea, that we could use stations within her constituency. Unfortunately, there weren't any suitable locations, but we have done the two neighbouring constituencies of Vauxhall and Putney. So those two stations, they're relatively busy. They do have staff from first to last train, so there is plenty of staff support just in case someone would need it. But we hope by having these stations that are relatively busy, it can really put the app through its paces and show people what it can do. And from our perspective as South Western Railway, get that feedback so that we know what we need to do to improve.
And how are you collecting that feedback? Do people feedback in the app or via some other mechanism?
Anyone who would like to trial this with us will need to feedback via a very quick, it's the equivalent of a Survey Monkey. Obviously, if something is not accessible to somebody, our details will be available and we can feedback that way. But we very much welcome and thank the RNIB for their support with this, because without RNIB, we wouldn't have been able to get this off the ground.
Okay, so it's a trial of Bluetooth beacon technology through the My Eyes app, moving around at Vauxhall and Putney stations. Mike, if anybody wants to get involved and perhaps try this out, how long is the trial running for and where can we learn more?
The trial starts on the 1st of August and it's due to run for 3 months. Obviously, as everything with a trial, we'll review it as we go along. Suspect we may trial for longer. Ultimately, if it is successful, which we hope it is, we would then like to roll it out further across all of our stations. If anyone would like any further information, please do get in touch either with RNIB or South Western Railway, and we'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, and I just can't emphasise enough that whole point around safety. You know, make sure that when you're using any kind of navigation app, whether it's My Eyes or some other app, that you are able to focus and be aware on actually what's happening around you, and that you are able to be you know, confidently moving through that space with your cane or your guide dog. These apps they're augmentative, aren't they? They kind of add something to your experience and hopefully mean that you can be more independent, but they certainly don't replace those core navigation skills that we all know and love. All right, Mike, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Indoor navigation systems do seem to be all the rage at the moment, as well as My Eyes, which of course you heard there, a Bluetooth beacon based technology being trialled at a couple of stations in London. There is of course Waymap, which has also been trialled at a train station, and that requires the environment to be mapped using LiDAR. And then, of course, we have heard about the trial of NaviLens, which is an optical system that uses QR code style technology and the camera on your device to recognise points in your environment. And I guess the fourth technology that may be helpful in this space is remote visual interpreter services like Be My Eyes and IRA. So Callum Stoneman, Tasneem Arshad, I'll come to each of you. What technology do you use to navigate indoor spaces? Callum?
I think for me, if I really get stuck, it tends to be LiDAR, because I've obviously got a new 13 Pro iPhone recently, which has got the LiDAR functionality. And that is really good for... What I tend to do is go to the scene tab on Scene AI, and that will describe, you know, what's around me. And it works okay. I think it feels like we're at an early days with this technology where there's still a lot of barriers to it. You know, things like my eyes are great, and, you know, same with NaviLens, but they do require the venue to do a bit of extra work. And as we know, it can be difficult sometimes to get a venue to, or any company to make their app and website accessible, let alone install some hardware into their buildings. So there's that. And then my only issue with LiDAR is that at the minute, at least, it involves holding your phone out in front of you, which isn't always ideal. It's quite easy for it to either get dropped or, you know, worst case scenario, get just swiped out of your hand, which, you know, can happen. So I find LiDAR works best for me. If that doesn't work, I tend to fall back to the video services, you know, sometimes being my eyes, or if possible, to be honest, I personally just FaceTime my wife and say, right, what's going on? Where am I? That's just a personal thing for me. I prefer to get the help from someone that I know. But, you know, if she's not around, then be my eyes or Ira for me.
Tasneem, how do you feel about the role of technology when it comes to indoor navigation?
I think it's brilliant. It's personal preference, as Callum said. So again, I'm very much friends and family on video call if I'm stuck, sighted assistance usually. And I find that I would really like to use navigation apps. The issue for me is that if I'm certainly for outdoor in public in unfamiliar places, I wouldn't want to have the I'm already feeling like I'm visually distorted with everything that's going on, as well as having audio distortion. And I personally don't want to be having, you know, wearing earphones to be hearing synthetic speech either. Getting orientated, I think, is pretty challenging when, say, you're indoors in a train station or somewhere else. I think that can be quite challenging. So yeah, for me, it's got to be video calling, either using the audio describe services or usually mainly friends and family and sighted assistants. That works best for me.
Would some sort of wearable speaker be helpful, Tasneem? I mean, I know we've got things like bone conduction headphones, there's the Bose frames, sunglasses that have got speakers in the arms. I have a couple of the little Polk Boom Bit, which is a little wearable speaker that clips onto your collar, so you don't have to have anything obstructing your ears or anything on your head, and that's pretty good audio quality. Do you think something like that would help, or would you would just always prefer a human in that situation?
I think I'd always prefer a human personally, but I can imagine that actually for some people that, you know, what you suggested might work really well. I think for people, and I'm not speaking for every person who's partially sighted, having some vision, wearing the sort of frames, the Bose frames, for example, or anything that does that type of thing, it blocks what vision I do have. So if I was to wear a pair of those, any shades for me just completely blocks what vision I do have. So I think it would be truly, you know, pretty challenging if I was to wear any type of sunglasses, really. I lose my orientation even further. So therefore, the sighted assistance is going to work best for me in those situations.
Callum Stoneman, if you were a betting man and you were to back one of these technologies, the Bluetooth beacons, the LiDAR-based solutions, or perhaps the NaviLens-style optical type approach, or maybe remote visual interpreter services, which of those kind of four approaches to indoor navigation do you think has the edge or may win out in the end?
Ooh, I don't know. It's a tough one because as I said before, they all have their drawbacks. I think the major drawback to things like the My Eyes and the, not so much the NaviLens, because they're quite easy, but things like My Eyes, where they've got to put Bluetooth beacons in, I think they're going to take a lot longer to gain full traction because they require the venue to, you know, install this hardware and be aware of why this hardware helps. And as I said before, we know that can be difficult. I think personally, if LiDAR ever comes to, for example, a pair of glasses, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the Apple Glass, whether it's actually going to happen, I don't know. But I think if LiDAR ever came to the glasses, that could be a real game changer, for me at least. I know there's, again, there's barriers to that. You've got to have a pro phone, But then, you know, if it's on a pair of glasses, maybe you wouldn't. Maybe you just need the glasses. So I think if LiDAR could be on your face, and then by extension, you could, you know, that would probably be a camera as well. So you could still video call and, you know, without having to use your phone, they could just see what's like what your glasses are looking at. I think that could be a big game changer in this sort of navigation for me personally. That's where I'd bet.
Thomas Pocklington Trust are evaluating these different technologies and are hoping to produce a report at some stage. So we'll try and get them here on Tech Talk to share their findings. Callum Stoneman and Tasneem Arshad, thank you very much. And let us know what technology you are using for navigation, whether that's indoors or outdoors. We'd love to hear from you here at Tech Talk. The email address, as always, it's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's Tech Talk, T-E-C-H, talk at rnib.org.uk. That's it for this time on Tech Talk. Do tune in next time when we'll be hearing about the WeWalk Smart Cane. Callum Stoneman will be explaining how to make those social media posts more accessible with alt tags. And I'll be catching up with RNIB's accessible gaming expert. That's all coming up next time on Tech Talk. That's it, folks. Cheers, Callum. Tasneem, bye for now.
Cheers. See you next week.
See you soon.
And from me, Dave Williams, and the rest of the team, until next time, bye-bye.